the podcast with everything paranormal. This is the 222 Paranormal Podcast with your host, Jen and Joe.
Hey, hey, hey.
What's up, Jen?
Oh, gosh. Been a busy, busy week. I was on vacation all of last week. I was off for 11 days in a row, and I was very, very happy. But no, I got a lot of stuff done, and...
Yeah.
Bum, bum, bum. Saw a shadow figure in my house again.
Oh, you did?
Yes. So, you know.
Resident shadow figure?
I think it's dad. I think he was hanging around for a little bit.
Could be.
Yes. Yeah, so I caught an EVP of my dad saying his name.
Really?
Yeah. I played it for you. So, yeah, it was interesting because I was like, I just felt something, some weird presence in my room, and I just... It was so weird. It was just like there was something there, and I was getting the goosebumps and the chills. So I whipped out my spirit SB7 and started recording. And I asked, you know, who's here with me? Can you say your name? And clear as day, it's a Dick. And that, you know, that was his, and it sounded like his voice. So that was my excitement for the week. So I had to share with all our listeners my spooky tales for the week.
Would you be willing to put that up on our Facebook page?
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
Why not?
I'll put it into an MP3 file and we'll figure that out. But yeah, I had a normal week. Just rode a 20-mile bike ride, which I haven't rode in so long, or that long a distance. It just about killed me. But
did you have rubber legs?
I'm going to keep doing it. So it's my goal to do a 50-mile ride. And a lot of people, they're like on the road bikes, are like, oh, 50 miles or nothing. Well, I'm riding a mountain bike.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little different because the front sprocket is smaller and can't go as fast. But
yeah, lost me at mountain bike. But no, you know, it's just been wonderful. And speaking of wonderful, we have an absolutely fabulous, wonderful guest with us today. We're very, very honored to have her on our show. So with us today, we have Heather L. Arnold. She is a graduate of Syracuse University, and she had a 10-year career in television industry as a copywriter and marketing and sales executive in Los Angeles and Manhattan. I'm very jealous of that. Followed by a 5-year career in pharmaceutical sales, but in the early 2000s, she was given the opportunity to move from New York to the Caribbean island of Aruba. So jealous of that. And where she started her own tour company, and her quest for historical accurate tours led to her other discovery of the Giants, which is what our show is all about today. She runs, after, you know, running the successful company, she pursued the history of the Giants in the Caribbean, and her book, The Island of the Giants, The Lost Race of Giants in Aruba, Bonaire, I hope I said that right, in Caraco, with us today, Heather L. Arnold. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, so we actually met you at Phantom Fest in Virginia with our cuz, we call him cuz, Rodney Shortridge, which you've been on his show, Within the Chaos, which was a really wonderful interview. Joe and I both listened to it. We really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was a pleasure to be on his show, too, and at the conference. That was a great conference. That was my second year. Yeah. 2 years in a row I was able to go, so I was happy about that.
You know, we were so fascinated when we found out, you know, what your speech was going to be on and your topic and the book you've written, because Joe has for years been so fascinated by giants, giant skeletons, you know.
Indian burial mounds, all that. Yeah.
So we wanted to, you know, really dive into what, one, brought you to Aruba, which we mentioned a little bit in your bio, but you can tell us more about that. And then how this discovery of the Giants and you having this fascination, where that came from.
Sure. Yeah. I moved, as you said, from New York to Aruba, and I started a tour company, and I had a quest to have a historically accurate tours. And I noticed on the island, and I kind of listened to other tour operators speak about the history of the island. And I was, you know, they would kind of be speaking hyperbole and kind of augment stories to, of course, they're working on tips. So I didn't see any historical nature of what they were saying, but I understood the entertainment value of what they were saying. So I thought a good way to set my company aside from other things, was to have historically accurate tours. So luckily in Aruba and in Curacao and in Bonaire, but especially in Aruba, they have a very extensive archaeology museum. And I wandered in there one day, it was under construction, and I was able to get some books purchase some books. It wasn't fully open. And then I started researching, and I found out through the archaeological record that the islands used to be called the Islands of the Giants. And when I say islands, I mean Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao. There are three Caribbean islands under the control of the Kingdom of the Netherlands, and they hug the northern coast of South America. As a matter of fact, Aruba is only 16 miles off the coast of Venezuela. And as I began to dig deeper, I saw a paper, a transcript of a speech an archaeologist was giving, I don't know to whom, but it was a transcript of this speech and say, basically really being protesting that Aruba did not have giants on it, that the islands did not have giants on it. This was hyperbole and this was made up. And I thought, wow, why is this person protesting so much about something that's not true? And no one even brought anything up about giants. And then I started to look at the archaeological record, which was very difficult to come by. If you've ever tried to get access to archaeological records, it's almost cloistered information, very difficult to access. And through the study of probably at this point 75 to almost 100 archaeological research papers, I discovered that there was once a giant race of humans who had elongated skulls, and they lived on the islands of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao at least 5,000 years ago, and my presumption could be even more. And they were an elite, dominating class of people who had very intricate burials, had a very intricate lifestyle, and had anatomical differences. They made them a distinct race, and a race that has simply disappeared off the face of the earth, or seemingly disappeared off the face of the earth. So that was my first entree into the giants. And I couldn't believe it. I was so excited because it then set me off on a path of research that continues to this day, almost 10 years later.
How did you go about trying to figure out, okay, where do I even begin?
Right. So if you do a Google search or any, you know, there's nothing. I mean, there was at that time, there was really nothing. I finally stumbled across a mention of Vespucci's letters to the New World, from the New World. So Amerigo Vespucci in 1499, after Columbus's last journey to the New World, Vespucci got the rights to come to the New World. And he brought with him a cartographer named Juan de la Cosa, who had been on all the prior journeys with Columbus before. So in 1499, he traveled to the Island of the Giants, and he wrote about it to the sovereigns of Europe, who were financing his expedition, and spoke of his interaction with the giants on one of these islands off the coast of Venezuela. And he makes mention in this letter, I call these islands the Islands of the Giants because of the stature of the people who live here. And he recounts a story about how the ship first got to the island. They noticed in the sand enormous footprints. They followed the footprints and soon were met by three enormously tall but well-proportioned women, an older woman, like a mother, and two teenage girls. And then they took the men, they showed the men into their village, and they started to try to give them food. There's no real indication what type of food there was. And all of a sudden, the explorers tried to devise a plan to steal the two teenage girls and bring them back to the ship so they could present them to the sovereigns in Europe as gifts and as proof of the giants. And just as they were concocting a plan, these 36 men who were even bigger than the women, who Vespucci describes as if they were kneeling, they would still be taller than him, came in. He describes their weaponry, which was actually really why he decided to abort mission. He describes it, a giant hammer type tool that Vespucci didn't even think he could lift, and some sort of spear. And so the explorers decide to retreat back to the ship, and they're followed intently by the giants all the way to the shore. And then they get on the ship, Vespucci and the gang, and then they start to leave the shore, and the giants start to come in the water and are shooting arrows at them. So Vespucci sends off a cannon and tries to scare them, and he writes he felt that day he would almost be killed and would die. So that was my first way, to, you know, indication, like, wow, here is the validity of this. And in 1502, the first map of the New World, called the Mappa Mundi, on it displays Aruba and also the island of Curaçao. At that point, they hadn't discovered Bonaire yet. And on the map, it specifically says the islands of the giants. And from that point, I began to want to look at the archaeological record because I figured, well, if this was in 1499, there was clearly an overlap because there was another group of individuals who came from the mainland of South America who began to inhabit the islands, but was not of the similar stature as the giants and were clearly in a subordinate level. And I then began to do research into the archaeological record, which was very difficult to come by. I ended up scouring antique bookshops in Europe, trying to call different university libraries. Interestingly, a lot of these studies that I ended up getting a hold of, almost all of them, I'm only missing one study that even the archaeologists in Aruba don't have access to, they don't know where it is, were in medical libraries in universities. So one of the universities was right by me. I was able to go there and make copies of the article. I was able to find some in Europe at the Leiden University and convince a reference librarian to make copies for me and email them to me. And so I also bought a lot, as I said, from the antique bookshops, these medical journals from the 70s, the 60s, the 50s. I got one all the way back to 1904. I spent probably thousands of dollars on it, but I have probably the most comprehensive archaeological record of the giants than most archaeologists, if not all the archaeologists. So that was my foray, because I knew I wanted to have proof, material proof of the giants. And in the reports, there was proof of the giants.
Yeah, and I know that you were in Aruba, and it's nice over there is because when they do find skeletons in that, they're not shunned away or... Like, we always hear the stories of the Smithsonian taking the skeletons right away, and they're never seen again. And
right.
It's nice over there because they don't have that, from what I understood from your demonstration at the convention.
Well, they do. There is one giant skeleton on display. It is almost treated as a joke, but it's an actual giant skeleton. It was actually researched in 1980. It's in the archaeological record. It's called the Bonaire skeleton, and that skeleton was presumed to be 6 feet tall or taller, but and that's what it will say when you go to visit it. But if you look at the archaeological report, this is what's so funny about what archaeologists trying to cover up what the reality is, which I saw a lot in the archaeological record, because these bones didn't make sense to them. Mm-hmm. The presumption of the researcher, of the scientist, was that this skeleton was probably 7 feet tall or taller, had an elongated skull, and proved Vespucci's observations that there were giants on the islands of Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao. So that the fact that the giants is there on display, which I did see last summer and have photos of, is interesting, but the description of it doesn't tell the full story and kind of dismisses it, which is kind of an interesting component. And you'll see that often, even, you know, globally with giant remains that don't fit into the archaeological record. But there are two skulls that I've been trying to get back to Aruba that have been missing. They were in the Curaçao Museum, uncovered in 1970 by a man named Chris Angles, who actually built a museum and put the skulls in there because he couldn't even find an archaeologist to research the skulls because the archaeologists completely deny that giants exist. So he ended up having a researcher come from the Tropical Museum in Amsterdam, and she was a physical anthropologist paleontologist, and she researched the skulls, and she determined that they were giant remains. She was going to do carbon-14 analysis of the bones, but sadly, en route to Peru to do further research, her plane crashed and she died. So, and the principal investigator of the study, Chris Engels, ended up getting hit by a car and got killed. So nothing else was done with these bones except put into this museum that Chris Engels had built. So when I called, it was about 2 years ago, looking for the skulls, the curator of the museum told me that the museum had recently undergone an extensive reservation and that the skull renovation, and that the skulls were taken to the Netherlands. I've contacted the University of Leiden as well as the archaeologists in both Aruba and Curacao, and no one knows where the skulls are. So here we are again in the same dilemma, mystery unravels. Yeah, mystery, missing skull. No one has a record, but yet they were specifically taken from the museum, which is very strange. So yeah. Clearly there was a value. Someone wanted them. They obviously are somewhere. They could have easily been misplaced. But I don't think so, because at Chris Engels' museum called the Curacao Museum, which is still there, he had on a placard the remains of the giants of Aruba. And as a matter of fact, in, I believe it was 1980, in the Reading Eagle, which is a paper in Pennsylvania, still in publication in Reading, Pennsylvania, one of their reporters went to the Curacao Museum and makes mention in her article about why you should go to Curacao and how great the Curacao Museum is, how there were in the basement of the museum two skulls that were purported to be belonging to over 8 foot tall giants. And they were of, you know, the islands of the giants, and they were found in Aruba. So it's a very nonchalant report. And soon after that, I guess really in the early 2000s, the skulls just vanish, and there's no record of them since, sadly.
Isn't that amazing that they can just vanish, you know?
Yeah, somebody knows something.
So sad. Oh, yeah, they're at someone's private collection or in the basement of a museum where a lot of, you know, you'd be surprised. I mean, you wouldn't, but you'd be surprised how many things, there's probably more stuff in the museum basements than there are out on display.
And they
just keep them locked away, you know, and it's a shame.
Yes. Yeah, I went to the basement of the museum of the Aruba Archaeological Museum. And first of all, the basement is, you know, runs the whole diameter of the entire museum. I mean, it's enormous. It's almost like a warehouse. And I mean, just shelves upon shelves upon shelves of skulls and bones and pottery and all these amazing things. I'm just thinking, why isn't this stuff? Yeah. You know, why can't they do a rotation of stuff? Or I never can understand that. I don't understand anything. I don't know why they cloister away all the best stuff. It's like, it's a very bizarre thing, especially if you want to try to, you know, if I were marketing the museum, that's what I would promote. But there's a lot of politics, and archaeologists can be strange with that type of thing, particularly with giants. So maybe some of the stuff is hidden, but it's very interesting. But yes, the basements of archaeology museums are way more interesting than what's on display above them.
Now, when you say that the heads or the skulls were elongated, were they conical? Like, were they going up, or was it more going behind the skull outwards?
Right. So yes, exactly. Great question. So now you'll see, I don't know if you're familiar with Brian Forrester, but he's done research with the Paracas elongated skulls. And these people are kind of contemporaneous with the giants in Aruba. And their skulls go straight up, very elongated and go straight up. In Aruba, these skulls went up. So there's a high forehead, but then went back. And according to Brian Forrester, he believes this because there are two types of skulls found globally, the ones where the skull goes in a cone shape and the ones where they go up and back, but still considered elongated, and they are elongated. He says that the ones with the skull going up and back could be some type of a mixture of the mating of the conical shape elongated skull people and another race of people, and this was their offspring. So obviously DNA testing would have to be further done on an extensive level. But it's quite fascinating that there could be a connection between all of the elongated skull people based off of these original conical shaped people, which would be really quite fascinating. And I hope in my lifetime I can see that DNA testing.
Yeah, definitely. Now, in Aruba, you know, when you were there and living there, what's the normal person there? You know, are they like maybe average height?
Right. So that's a great question too, because they're, you know, I was married to an Aruban. He was over 6 feet tall, but which is still kind of tall for a man, but they're kind of, they're robust people, I would say, probably a little bit taller than the average American, say in New York, which New York has a kind of relatively shorter stature than the rest of the country. I think the tallest people in the U.S. are in Minnesota, I believe. But that could have changed. But the last I checked, that's what I saw. But what's interesting is I lived in Aruba, so I have a lot of Aruban friends, and my daughter is half Aruban, so she has a Aruban family. And I've spoken to a couple of my friends there, and two of them made mention of people in their family that they called giant. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, my friend Maddie, she was telling me of her great uncle, who was a boxer because his fists were the size of a person's head. Oh. And he was such a skilled boxer. He was trained. He was actually scouted because of his size, and they trained him to box. And he was so powerful, he actually killed someone in the ring in South America. So she said what was fascinating about him was his jaw and his head. We always said how strange what the shape of his head was, and he had an enormous lower jaw, and his teeth were so big, which is what they find in the archaeological remains. And the size of his fist, she said he was totally proportioned. It wasn't like the giants were gangly, like thin NBA players, or, you know, but these were very robust individuals, maybe 4 feet across shoulder width and an enormous amount of weight. And so she told me of her uncle, and he ended up passing away, and he was a Aruban. And then I had another friend, Randolph, tell me about someone in his family, who they called Giant, Aunt Giant. It was another aunt, and she was enormous. And he said all of her family, all of the kids were enormous. I think there was one person left on her side of the family that he was going to introduce me to, who was also very tall person, not as tall as the original, the mother and the father, because this was a couple of generations later, but someone who was equally tall. But unfortunately, I did not get to speak to him. But I'm hoping when I go back, if I go back to Aruba in July, if the borders open, I'll be able to speak to him and get more information on his family.
Now, what do you think the average? I mean, they mentioned giants, okay, and lots of times you see pictures of the hand drawn pictures of the giant skulls being like 40 feet across, which we all know are fake, you know.
Right.
But what do you think the average size of a quote unquote giant that has been found? Because I see everything from people being 6 to 7 feet tall being called giants, and they even say that there were some that were 20 some feet tall. So it's hard to say what they actually mean by giant. What do you think the average size would be?
Yeah, it's so in the U.S. or in North America in general, the reports of the giants are 8 to 9 feet tall, sometimes 10 feet tall, and it usually is in that range. It's usually the giants in Aruba and Bonaire and Curaçao were probably about 7 to 8 feet tall.
Okay.
The Bonaire skeleton was purported to be about 7 to 8 feet tall, and in the investigator's own words, he says, or even taller. The largest skull ever found in in the island was actually on the island of Curaçao. It was written about in 1904, and it was 290 millimeters long. It was actually almost a foot long. So the the investigator on that study said, you know, this was clearly a large statured being, and he was comparing it to other skulls he had found on the island, which were much more recent, and said that this skull belonged to an older person of Curaçao, not of the same race as the other skulls he was investigating. So I think, you know, I mean, a foot-long skull, it's got to be at least 7 to 8 feet tall individual, and that seems to be the average height of the giants in Aruba. But they also had anatomical differences. For example, where the skull attaches to the neck, that area where it attaches has to be much further back than the modern human, because it has to accommodate the weight of the skull and the brain case. So that's one difference. Where the lower part of the jaw, the lower jaw, attaches to the skull is in a different placement, because it's a much larger jaw. And even the ears are positioned differently. And most interestingly, I think, is that one of the archaeologists spoke about having to cut away some of the bone and couldn't use a human cadaver saw to cut through the bone, that the bone was so thick, and had to actually invent a saw to try to get through the bone. So there were anatomical differences that made them very different from modern humans, or even other races of humans that were on the planet at that time and contemporaneous to the giants.
Yeah, and that's what another thing I was thinking too, because we all know that, you know, they found skulls with double rows of teeth and six fingers and six toes and that. So I was going to ask you, do you think that there are different races? But they're apparently are.
Yeah, that's the other fascinating thing, because then you wonder, in Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao, I've not heard of any double rows of teeth or six fingers or six toes. Now, when you go out west, New Mexico, Arizona, Colorado, especially Mesa Verde, and a lot of places in New Mexico, you'll find handprints with six fingers, footprints with six toes, and also stories of giants. There's a giant that is housed in a place in Arizona outside of Tucson. It's called The Thing. It was found, and there's all this story and mystery how it was found on a farm and sold and bought and all this stuff. And that giant, it's on display, but you have to look at it from afar, is purported to have double rows of teeth and six fingers and six toes. And from the analysis of the different types of giants, some of them had blonde hair or light hair. The giants in Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao had light hair and light skin and light eyes. But then you hear of the giants, say, in Nevada, who had red hair, or some giants in Europe who had black hair, some giants in North America and even in Europe who had double rows of teeth and six fingers and six toes. So there was some sort of genetic thing happening, mixture, that, and I don't know how it occurred, obviously, but that caused these different lineages of the giants. That again, if we could even get some of the DNA and compare, maybe there's a common ancestor between them all.
Yeah.
Did you do any physical digging or archaeology in Aruba yourself?
Well, I did see. I went to a cave that I'd been trying to get to for 7 years. And in that cave was a burial, and there were five skeletons in that burial. And three or four, the fourth one, the archaeologists weren't sure. It was a brain case. It wasn't enough bones to make a determination. But three of the skeletons, at least, were giant stature. And it took me 7 years to get to these caves, because they're super high up on a sheer cliff wall of limestone. And they're also protected by a 5-foot-tall killer beehive. Once you even get up there, if you don't fall, then you hear this buzzing. And then, I mean, those bees will swarm you, and they could put you in the hospital. So one day all the stars aligned, and I was able to get up to these caves. And one cave is all petroglyphs and pictographs, and I believe it was also a birthing chamber. And then the middle cave was the burial site. And there was enormous limestone block that was on top of the major giant that was in the center of the burial. And the other skeletons were outside in a circle around the main burial as if spokes in a wheel. And that's actually a burial that's very typical with giants. And I saw where the archaeologists had dug up the bones, where they had moved the stones. I saw the gravestones that were on top of the graves. And there were other skeletons uncovered there too. Of course, they're lost now too, sadly. So that was my one foray into it. Now, recently in Aruba, there were more bones found in a similarly difficult to access location. And the two of these caves, there were excavations that went on, but the third cave, the bones were left because it was in such a hard to get to place. And also, you know, to keep in mind, the Aruban people are still connected to these bones. These are their ancestors. These are sacred spaces, and these are burial sites. So the archaeologists are even hesitant to do research on every site that they find because of the connection between the Aruban people and these ancient beings. So they left the burial there. So I'm hoping when I go, and if I go to Aruba in July, that I will be able to get up to that site and see those bones. So that will be my first real handling of an area. I don't know if I'll touch the bones, but I'll definitely be able to see them in exactly how they were placed thousands of years ago.
Yes, take lots of pictures when you see them.
Yes, I can't wait.
Now, in the Aruban culture, is there tradition or their history? Do they have written records? Are they orally handed down the stories of their culture and their history? Or how did they record their history of their culture?
Yes, so they have a lot of pictographs and petroglyphs on all three of the islands. Some are show star maps. Some show supernatural beings. Some show maps even of portals. There are a lot of portals said to be on all three islands. There's also an oral tradition. They tell each other the stories, and the stories go down and down in history. Some now have been written in story form. For example, the creation story on Bonaire of humans coming out of this stone that's still there. I just saw it last summer, called the Bonaire Stone. And then, of course, there are ghost stories of these giants. There are hauntings. There are two places on the island in particular where there's a lot of people, the Aruban people, hearing crying, screaming, howling, seeing beings. One place is called Frenchman's Pass, and the other place is called Malmuk, which is one the most extensive giant burial ground in Aruba, with 70 bodies that had been uncovered, skeletons. But there are still more in the ground. And the Aruban people will always talk about those two places as being haunted, as well as this other rock formation, which is Io Rock Formation, which I propose was a spiritual center for the giants. Some people will hear sounds, for example, that they describe as not human and not animal. And Arubans won't go to, for example, Frenchman's Pass. They won't go there at night. I mean, unless they have to. Like, no one would walk through there or ride a bike. Or if you're in a car, you just want to focus and get through and get out of this little stretch of land, because people have looked back in their back seat and seen people sitting there and hearing wailing. The people who live there also hear noises in the middle of the night. So that the hauntings are attached to these ancient native populations too.
Kind of makes me want to go there.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely come.
Pack my bag awesome. As we speak.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a great place. I'm sure they'd love to have you.
Definitely. And so is there any documentation of the giants, of how they lived? Did they live in clans, cities, you know, any type of record of their existence as far as housing or using like a hammer or a tool that they had found? So were they very advanced?
They definitely did use tools. Mm-hmm. And there's actually a debris field in this area of Aruba. It's an extensive debris field that's still there. I mean, that some of the tools you could see, a friend of mine last year found one of their tools lying in a cave. You could tell it was exactly where they had put it maybe 5,000 years
wow,
ago.
That's incredible.
And what was amazing about their tools is that they're giant tools. They're huge tools. They're very complicated. You could tell each one had a specific purpose. They also used a lot of obsidian and quartz. And you can see there's an area of Aruba where they clearly mined the obsidian and mined the quartz. The clearest descriptions of how they lived is in Vespucci's letters. You know, when he would travel, when any of those early explorers traveled, they were traveling as, you know, researchers and scientists. On Vespucci's ship, that when he came to Aruba, he brought over doctors, scientists, pharmacists, people who were involved with every type of animal, every type of bird. So they were keeping a detailed record of all the different cultures they were encountering on their journey. And so Vespucci mentions how they lived in almost like a mud hut with grass or some type of vegetation on top of it, and how they would collect water from leaves, how they drank brackish water, which is interesting because most of the areas where they inhabited were next to brackish water streams. So, which is brackish water is very important to drink if you're living in a hot climate, and Aruba is only a couple of miles from the equator. Mm-hmm. So they also cultivated corn because a piece of corn was found in one of the teeth of one of the giants that was analyzed. It's corn that doesn't even exist to this day. And they also utilized limestone in a spiritual sense. So a lot of their special formations of stones, burials, petroglyph sites, etc., all are on limestone. So they didn't live on limestone, but they performed ritual and burial and shamanic practices on limestone. My hypothesis is because limestone has a crystalline property. Mm-hmm. And if you have something with crystals, the crystals will absorb the knowledge. And so I believe that there was some sort of connection between the crystals holding the knowledge and also perhaps augmenting energies. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of those sites are on fault lines, and fault lines do produce energies, which would be also kind of parallel to ley lines, for example. So that could be another aspect, but that's really all we know about the giants, since they were so long ago when they were really dominant, and I think even more than 5,000 years. A lot of their remains, as a matter of fact, just disintegrated when scientists would try to take them out of the ground. So the small amounts of bones that we do have, which is just one skeleton, the rest are all missing, is really important but it was a later giant. It wasn't one of the very, very early ones from 5,000 years ago. So the remains are, you know, maybe still buried, but if you look at the tools and the intricacy of their tools, you can see that they were highly evolved individuals.
Now, have you been to other places around the world to investigate giant skeletons?
Not so much the giants, but, you know, I went to Easter Island, which, you know, is purported to have been inhabited by giants. The Moai are supposed to be actually replicas of the giants or actually, you know, used now to worship the giants. I've been to Peru, and I did see the elongated skull people of Paracas. Their skulls are on display in the museum, the archaeological museum in Lima, Peru. Mm-hmm. So I have done some, but my major focus is the Caribbean and the giants there, because I know other people are researching the giants too globally. And so we do coordinate efforts. And I think it's important when giants are found literally all over the world, except Antarctica, but quite frankly, I think they're on Antarctica too. It's good to have people who are focused on giants in North America, giants in Europe, giants in Asia, giants in South America, and then coordinating all the information because it's so extensive. I mean, I've been studying the giants now in Aruba, these tiny Caribbean islands, very small Caribbean islands for 10 years. And still, I'm still discovering stuff every time I'm looking at more research and still learning more. As a matter of fact, the burial I'm supposed to see when I go to Aruba this July is the first burial found of an older female with a child, also a female, and a monkey, and a Carpuchin monkey. And the monkey was given an elite burial along with the two females. So that is a new piece of the puzzle that was just discovered and genetically proven as a fact just a year ago. So there's still so much to know about the giants that my main focus of research are the giants in the Caribbean. But whenever I travel, I always try to find, is there, you know, access to giant remains, or like, for example, in Peru, or this strange giant skeleton in Tucson, Arizona, that's on display. So, but I have a general knowledge of other giants, but I have extensive knowledge of the giants in the Caribbean.
You have been there, you've done the work, you've done the research. What prompted you to want to write your book? Was it just the compilation of all of this information that you just had to get, you know, get out there, or was this something you had planned on doing?
No, not at all. Actually, I never really planned on it, but I just figured, you know, it's a fascinating story. And because my daughter is a Reuben, and I wanted her to know her heritage. I think it's just, I think it's extraordinary. And I think it's something that people would be interested in learning about. Also, it was because of a story a couple of Aruban children had told me about what they learn in school about their history. And they learn that their island was discovered by the European explorers, and they called the islands the Useless Islands, because they were so arid and desert-like. There was no benefit to having them because you couldn't grow anything, you couldn't cultivate any crops. So it's almost inhospitable. So they called them the Useless Islands, which to me was sounded very colonialistic, you know, mm-hmm. trying to yeah. keep the population, to make them feel that, you know, they're being they're subordinate to these saviors who came and found the islands and brought them to modernity. But so that was kind of bothersome to me because I have a child who's a Reuben, and that's not something I want her to think. And I didn't want the people to think that, knowing what I know, why wouldn't they know? Why shouldn't they know the real story? I mean, and why shouldn't that story be shared with the world? And that's kind of how I thought of it. And plus, it's just fascinating, and the photos are fascinating, and I think just it's just an intriguing story that happens to be true.
And what surprised you most about the giants and what you, in all of your research, what was the one thing that it was like your aha, like, this is incredible moment?
I think when I figured out that there was a matriarchal society, mm-hmm. so the female was really in the dominant individual, and the female was really in a shamanic position. So, for example, in the Malmuk cemetery of 70 plus burials, there in the center of it all is this master main burial with this quite intricate rock formation above the burial. And then a very intricate burial underneath in terms of a huge tortoise shell, and then a platform of limestone on top of the tortoise shell, and then the skeleton of the remains of this female, and then this intricate diorite and limestone circular rock formation above the grave, and then a strange boulder with shells around it in the center. And she was the only one to have that prominent position in the burial. And she also was the oldest skeleton in the entire cemetery. I think she was upwards of 50 plus years old, which was a lot for that time. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, she had a hunched back because, you know, she was very old, and she was in very good condition and in the fetal position. And that was the first time I saw something about a female being in such a prominent position. And, you know, you would think a male just because of what we're taught about different societies, but it was a female. And then when I was looking at the old records of these cave systems that it took me 7 years to get to, and the central burial in the center of that burial that was like a spokes of a wheel in the center, it was believed that that skeleton was female. And then I started to do research on the petroglyphs and pictographs and notice all these cupules all over the island, which are cup marks. And these cup marks are the oldest form of rock art in the world. The oldest ones are found 400,000 years ago, as a matter of fact. They're found globally, and they generally are associated with the worship of the female in the form of the divine feminine. So it really was, to me, just incredibly important that this was a matriarchal society of giants. They were dominated by the females, who were also the shamans. And then when speaking to the native Arubans and the archaeologists in Aruba, they told me that they had heard stories from their ancestors that this was a matriarchal society. So so I confirmed it with the archaeologists and the people who have the folklore, which are the local Arubans. And then there was another burial found of a later date, also with a central female given a prominent burial. And then this most recent one discovered a couple of years ago, that I hope to see in July, of these two females with a monkey, also given a prominent burial. The monkey within ancient tradition was usually the helper of females, particularly if a female was a shaman. She couldn't be seen by men. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I went to India several years ago, and in the released in India, you'll see a monkey holding palettes of makeup for the women to apply their makeup. The monkey was an assistant. It was actually part of their crew, and it was not a pet, but was well-trained and would assist them. In ancient Egypt, you also see the monkey helping women. The monkey is very often associated with the female. So that was the most interesting, besides all the other amazing things about these people, that it was a female-dominated society that was really exalted. And it was quite impressive.
Now, the monkey, is that a native species to the island?
That's the question. So allegedly, no. But when there's a stone in this rock formation, an enormous boulder that has a face of a monkey carved into it, and the boulder is massive. I have photos of it. I should actually now, I'm going to post it again after this talk, because it is very impressive. And I have it with a picture with someone next to it, and you could see how massive it is. And this rock formation is thousands of years old. The petroglyphs, there are petroglyphs there. They're very old. There are alignments between the solstices and the equinoxes at this place. And there is now been found perhaps another burial with females with a monkey. So what is proposed is a capuchin monkey, which is from Venezuela, the mainland of Venezuela. Mm-hmm. So there could have been trade, which is even more interesting. Or there could have been the monkey on the island. That's another component. So it's unknown at this time if the monkey was there, but not, there's no record of it anywhere. But maybe thousands of years ago it was. Or there was a trade situation going on with the mainland of Venezuela, because the mainland people of Venezuela did know about the giants, because they were the ones who told Vespucci about the giants. So there could have been trade going on between them, and then these elite ruling classes, the women, got these monkeys and trained them to be their assistants.
That's the first I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I've never heard of the...
It would just indicate that there was some form of travels, of trade, of exploring other lands. You know, maybe at some point they left the island for some reason. I don't know.
Well, the giant, well, in 2003, there was a mitochondrial DNA study done of the original Arubans who live on the island. And when I mean original, I mean they didn't leave the island, live in Holland, go to Colombia. There was no real interbreeding. They were almost 100% Aruban. And the study determined that in their DNA, they did have some genetic material that was traced to the giants, to the archaic humans who lived on the island. And of all the DNA on the planet before and since, it was unmatched. The only match were to these archaic giants. So I personally believe it must have happened is there was a interbreeding between the giants and average statured races of humans that were then starting to invade the island and live maybe symbiotically with the giants. But clearly there was a mixing going on because that DNA lives on today, maybe even in my daughter, who knows?
Yeah. Were the burials mounds or were they just, like you were mentioning, caves? Because I've looked into the, you know, the mounds here in Ohio, and I know that in Newark, Ohio, they say that they found a giant skeleton in the mound there, which is very interesting because they found what they call the Newark Holy Stones with it, which are stones with Hebrew writing on them. But I was wondering if the burials that you saw were actually mounds or if they were just like cave burials.
There are two types of burials. They're in caves and they are in a massive cemetery site, which is flat. It's just a flat land and they are dug into the ground. The burials are done in the shape of isosceles triangles. So the giant would be on each of the angles of the isosceles triangles, and then average statured humans are on the lines that make up the triangle.
Oh.
And this is repeated over and over and over and over again in this giant cemetery, pardon the pun.
Yeah.
So that was the large cemetery, so that's presumed that that was where very close to a major city, so to speak. And in the older burials in a place called Canashito in Aruba, Hato in Curacao, they were in caves. So it could also be the level of status they had too, because these caves were very inaccessible. There wasn't a lot of room for a lot of burials. There were only a couple of people, whereas in Malmuk, it was 70 plus burials. So it could have been a distinction between status, or it could have been just as they moved on to later periods and actually developed into bigger populations that they created the cemetery. But I have no evidence of burial mounds as there are in Ohio, West Virginia. There's no evidence of that so far that I've found on the island.
Okay, but now in the caves, you mentioned the petroglyphs. Were there any that would say either that they know of the name of the people buried there or indicating like their status or anything?
No, you know, they're very strange, very bizarre petroglyphs. Some of them, there was actually a researcher from the University of Florida, an archaeologist who was a specialist in Mayan language and alphabet, who found some of the petroglyphs in Bonaire were identical to the oldest Mayan handwriting and he correlated it. There were also supposedly in some caves, there's Chinese writing. So I don't know if it's more that different types of people were coming through these islands and just making their mark, or if they actually settled there. I don't know. But there's no real indication of something that could be deciphered. There's a lot of repetitive patterns of petroglyphs that we see globally, such as spirals. You see the cup marks, the sun, the moon, handprints, kind of those universal petroglyphs and pictographs we see, but nothing that could determine any type of identification. The most interesting thing is in the birthing chamber, what I call the birthing chamber in Canashito, is there's a drawing of a woman with a baby in her stomach, and then there's tick marks on a wall. And the tick marks in the Native American culture, in the ancient Native American culture, usually meant births, and they would have birthing chambers very similar to what I saw in Aruba. So perhaps this was the closest to identifying who they could have been, but beyond that, there's no indication, sadly. I wish.
Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's, you know, I'll study this till the day I die. That's how much information there is on this, which is great. It's always fun to learn more.
It is. I mean, that's like when I went to Newark, I just went there to visit my friend, and I knew about the giant earthworks, they call it, the giant right. circle. And I'm like, I want to go there. And then I started reading about it. And it's like, the more you dig, not the pun, but the more you dig into this, the more you find and the weirder it gets.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And the more questions you have, always.
And you know what a fascinating place. I mean, it's a beautiful tropical island. It's lucky that you found that there versus maybe some desolate, you know,
right,
freezing
right.
cold island and
yes,
nothing there but birds and.
It's great. Bats. No, I'm glad. I always say I didn't find the giants. The giants found me. So that's how I always feel about the giants. So they chose me. And so, you know, part of my lifelong mission will to probably be to repatriate these skulls that are missing back to Aruba. So that's my big push. I want to do something beyond just a book. I would like to really help bring back the bones to Aruba.
Yeah. And if they know that they were taken out, there may not be
yes.
a paper trail, but there is a trail of some sort. I mean, like you said, they knew they were taken out, so they knew they were there.
Exactly.
So they,
yeah.
they physically went somewhere.
Right. And someone physically has them, whether they know it or not. But I know someone has them. And I mean, they specifically took them. So mm-hmm. that makes it, in my mind, purposeful. And so there must be someone who knows. And I'll keep looking. I know someday I'll find them.
Absolutely. Now, you, just on another topic, you run a really very interesting Facebook page called Stones, Bones, and the Paranormal. You know, that's one of my favorite sites to go to. You always have such interesting things that you post on there.
Thank you.
So I encourage all of our listeners to definitely check it out and follow the page. If somebody wanted to get a copy of your book, how would they go about doing that?
Well, it's so I'm still in the process of finishing the book.
Oh, okay.
So I'm hoping by the end of this year I'm going to self-publish. So I'll have it on my Facebook page. I'm going to have it on a website, and I'll probably have it on Amazon. I have to see. I'd rather have more control over.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get nervous when you relinquish control over to. Someone like Amazon. But so I will keep you posted. And I also have a page called The Islands of the Giants on Facebook. So I would definitely have something on that page too.
Awesome. I'll tell you, when I look at your Facebook page and I look at the different interviews that you've done and talking to you today, I've learned so much already. And I just,
oh, great.
And I was blown away when I got to actually sit in on your talk at Rodney's show. And I was
right.
like, because we went there, you know, to support Rodney. We call him our cuz. We don't know if he's actually related or not.
We do have the same last name.
Same last name,
right.
You know. And so he invited us, and I'm like, yeah, I'll go. Okay, we'll go. And when I saw you were there and saw what your talk was about, I'm like, ooh, yeah. Yeah, I got to listen.
Joe was all
I did everything I could.
Fangeeking out.
Yeah, I had to get in and watch.
Great. Oh, so glad. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you got to see it. I really appreciate it. And I remember meeting you first at the dinner the
yes.
night before,
yes.
right? Yes. And when you said you both had the same last name, I thought, wow, that's so interesting because it's not a very common last name.
No,
so
it's not.
Very
and
interesting.
The funny thing is, you know, Rodney is a paranormal investigator. He has a podcast.
Yeah.
We do the same thing. I'm like, this is like a match made in heaven, kids.
Yeah. It's so interesting. It's really amazing. I actually thought you both were related at that time. And
no.
then when you said you were, and I was wow.
I know.
That's incredible. But there must be something in the in your ancestry somewhere where your paths cross.
Oh, definitely.
Someday when we have time, we'll dig into it, you know.
Right. Exactly.
It might be a retirement project, but you know.
Yeah, right.
Someday.
It sounds good.
Definitely. Well, Heather, we really, really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing all your knowledge about giant bones and skeletons and the beautiful island of Aruba, which someday I will visit and
I
get very
so.
Sunburned. But no, we really appreciate it. And if anybody wanted to get a hold of you, how would they get to you?
Anyone can send me a message. I get messages all the time. They can send me on my Facebook page through my Facebook, Heather L. Arnold. And even if we're not friends on Facebook, I still answer all of my messages. So they can send me a message, or they can just contact me right on my page. And I have a page, Heather L. Arnold, too, and they can message me there, or on the Islands of the Giants. They can message me there, too.
Yeah, definitely. So if you are the owner of a giant skeleton, you need to yes. contact Heather.
If you have two skulls that you
today.
Don't, if you have two right, skulls that please. You don't know where it came from.
Right, right. Just lying about. Please.
Absolutely. Contact me. So, everybody, thank you very much for listening in to our interview with Heather L. Arnold.
Yes, and thank you, Heather, also.
Yes, we really appreciate
it. It was my
you.
Pleasure. Too, so too. Great to speak with you again.
Yes, you too.
And thank all the listeners for tuning in this week. Like we always say every week, get up there, share our page. If it brings you any joy, please get up there and share our page with all your friends. Share, share, share.
Yep, definitely check out our Facebook page or Twitter and soon to come Instagram. So everybody have a great week and we will talk to you next week.
And let's leave with a little bit of Shadow of a Thin Man by Dead and Fire. Thanks, everyone.